sports opinions with a side of satire.
We're the First and Tens, a weekly show delivering the spiciest opinions on football, life, and especially each other.
And we can do that because we've been best friends for so long. I'm Amy.
And I'm Jasmine. First and Tens will bring you sports from the female perspective while also injecting pop culture, fashion, and music into our daring dialogue.
We're saucy, edgy, and most of all, we think we're funny AF. First and Tens, light on stats,
heavy on sass. Follow us at firstandtenspodcast.com.
Hey there, Fangirl Nation. It's time for another episode of Fangirl Sports Network's Fangirl Playbook, and we've got a very special guest. From Justin Herbert to the 49ers' struggles to whether the Browns really are good, the Sacramento Bee's Chris Biederman joins Steph and I to break down all things NFL. Then we take a look at Major League Baseball's championship series, and I reveal how the Dodgers made my NLCS choice very easy. After that, we're off to Dylan for the season one finale of Friday Night Lights, State. I cry because, obviously, clear eyes, full hearts, can't lose, let's get to it. All right, Fangirl Nation, Steph and I are very excited today. I'm speaking on your behalf, Steph, because we have a special, special guest, the great Chris Biederman of the Sacramento Bee, who covers the San Francisco 49ers and who has also become a big Friday Night Lights fan. Chris Biederman, welcome to Fangirl Playbook.
Thank you so much. That's the first time anybody's called me great at anything.
Well, you are
welcome. I appreciate that.
You should come here every week. I say everything's great.
Yeah, so maybe I will. Maybe I will. A little confidence boost in 2020. So
we're pretty nice on the Fangirl Playbook, I have to say. So
we want you to come back eventually.
Yes.
So we sure. Always try to be nice.
That's how we roll. Well, we have so much to discuss. So we're going to jump right in. We have a new champion of the National Basketball Association, the Los Angeles Lakers. Woo-hoo! And I know Steph's not that excited about it, but woo-hoo! This LA girl is very excited about it. And the day after the Lakers won the championship, two teams from LA decided that was enough excitement for the city and they would lose on the same night. So we will get into that. So let's actually start with last night's Monday Night Football game between the Chargers and the Saints. It was quite a game. Chris Biederman, you have said Justin Herbert just might be pretty good.
Yeah, he looks good. I admittedly, covering the 49ers, I did not do a whole lot of quarterback scouting, i.e. watching YouTube highlights in the offseason on Herbert. But he was kind of a mixed bag in terms of the all the draft analysts, what they said about him. There have been a lot of, like, big, tall, athletic quarterbacks that come in the league, and not a lot of them have lived up to the hype or been worth their teams investing first-round picks in them. But Justin Herbert going to New Orleans, obviously it's a little bit different because there are no fans in the stands there, but doing what he did last night, making a lot of really good throws on the run. He has a really great arm. He looks like he throws a really catchable pass. So I think Chargers fans should probably be excited about Herbert. Maybe I think he's outperforming expectations because a lot of people weren't really sold on him based on what they saw at Oregon. But I think you have to be excited if you're a Chargers fan at this point, on top of having the maybe the league's best uniforms right now.
I would agree with that. Those uniforms are pretty fantastic. But nonetheless, the Chargers did lose in a very typical Chargers fashion, and that's the hard part, of course, about being a Chargers fan. But yes, they do have a lot to be excited about with Justin Herbert, and when healthy, they have one hell of a defense. So there's that too.
The Chargers, you know, with the Tyrod Taylor, you know, basically kept his seat warm, and then he accidentally got punctured in the lung, kind of sent him to the sideline. So Herbert is kind of like coming out of nowhere, but at the same time, he had a lot of like negative draft traits, you know. But what's interesting is that I actually feel that his quiet nature and the way he handles is kind of what the team needs. And I think he's just kind of quietly going about his business. And I like that about him.
I think that's too Chris.
Four touchdown passes, no interceptions.
Yeah.
That's a big road game. I mean, it was, you know, the Chargers are obviously missing Derwin James. And I know Joey Bosa has been banged up a little bit, but Yeah, I think given that there weren't a whole lot of expectations for the Chargers this year, just knowing that the Chiefs were in their division and probably going to run away with that division again, I think this is a good step, at least in the early going for them, as they look to maybe compete for the NFC or the AFC West in 2021 and beyond.
So let's stick in the AFC West, shall we? Because we had a big win the other day with the Las Vegas Raiders, who admittedly I almost just called the Oakland Raiders. The Las Vegas Raiders beating the Kansas City Chiefs, showing that the Chiefs are beatable, as of course any team is on any given Sunday, not to be totally cliche. But that was a really big win for the Raiders, and I think solidified that they potentially are legit. Steph, what did you see out of that game?
I loved it for obvious reasons because I'm a hater. But I wasn't sure about how the Raiders would do against the Kansas City Chiefs, but everything being considered, Crosby got penetration. They were able to get to him, and Mahomes is him. I just think it's interesting because he's so tough. I think he's one of the best quarterbacks, but he's really hard to defend. But they were getting all over it, and I just appreciated how they were. I'm a big defense type person, so I liked everything that they were doing on defense. And I know Derek Carr gets a lot of heat, but I like him. So I was pulling for him, and I didn't know if they would pull it off. And it's always kind of like one of those things with Kansas City, but they had a good game and they deserve that win.
And Chris, we obviously didn't get to watch the game live, but what did you see when you took a look at it later?
Yeah. So it's interesting because the Chiefs are sort of this team that's known from coming from behind. Are known for coming from behind, and they came down from double digits in all three of their playoff wins last year. And they sort of jumped ahead of the Raiders. I mean, they got up 21-10 in the second quarter, and you would just assume that the Chiefs were going to roll the Raiders like they typically do when the Raiders go play in KC. And then the Raiders actually came back, and Henry Ruggs, their first round pick, big 72-yard touchdown. Josh Jacobs, their first round pick from a couple years ago, the running back from Alabama, had a nice game. So it's, he had two scores, 77 yards. It's just one of those wins that if you're a Raider fan sort of looking for a signature moment of the John Gruden era, this might be it. And this might be something that they can really build off of. It's been a couple years, but you remember how much the 49ers win back in like 2011 when they went to Philadelphia and came back from a double digit deficit to win that game. And how that sort of springboarded their season. Maybe this is something like that for the Raiders. I don't think that they have a realistic chance at winning the AFC West unless something really drastic happens to the Chiefs. I still think the Chiefs are clearly the best team in football and probably going to run away with that division. But at least now the Raiders know, hey, we can go hang with just about anybody on the road. And they haven't really had a win like this, to my memory, and since John Gruden became head coach. So if the Raiders do make a playoff run this year, I think you're going to be able to look back to this game and say that was really the turning point. And getting Ruggs to have the game that he did with, it was only two catches, but 118 yards and his score, Derek Carr throwing for 347 and three touchdowns. Like Steph mentioned, it's one of those games that I think you'll be able to point to and say, all right, that's when it all started for the Raiders. When if they do end up making a playoff run here this season.
And yeah, I love Derek Carr's comment after the game that he's had a few kids since the Raiders last won in Kansas City. And that's kind of an amazing comment. So it's good stuff. Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say that game was just so just had a lot of energy, even on the sidelines. And what was interesting about it, too, is that on the sideline, you could see Derek Carr mouthing, "Do you trust me?" to John Gruden. And I love that stuff because it's like, hey, maybe this is, they're finally, clicking, and they're getting whatever it is they're doing to click. And I think that Gruden had a little bit of tough comments for Carr. So I think this was really good for them to kind of move forward with.
So I want to talk about the Browns, but I'd like to first go from, we have the Raiders who might be clicking, and the 49ers, who are doing the absolute opposite of whatever clicking might be. A 49ers team that last year, everything clicked. And of course, they have had a lot of injuries, but it does seem to be more than that. They're obviously, they're 2-3, they're 0-3 at home. And the defending NFC champions, I mean, I'd be shocked, frankly, if they go to the playoffs this year. I don't know that that was, I don't know why I said frankly. I think everybody would be shocked at this point if they go to the playoffs this year. But they have a Sunday night game against the Rams at home. And for some reason that defies all logic or any sort of analysis, I do kind of think they will come out and play well and potentially win that game. I'm not saying it's going to be the start of anything. I think there's a potential there. But Chris, let's talk a little bit 49ers. What is going wrong besides everything?
So Kyle Shanahan spelled it out a little bit in his press conference, his Zoom press conference on Monday, when he said that they've only had one practice with Jimmy Garoppolo, mm-hmm. Raheem Mostert, George Kittle, Brandon Ayuk, the first round pick at receiver, and Deebo Samuel, who has been back for two games since breaking his foot over the summer and missed all of training camp. So it sort of speaks to this lack of continuity and cohesion you see on offense, that, you know, all of those skill guys, their most important players on offense, have only practiced together once all season. And I think you're seeing that show up when they're playing. And obviously, I mean, to me, you know, the injury stuff, I think that sort of explains a lot of the 49ers issues. Like defensively, you're missing your three best pass rushers from last year, essentially, or at least your two best pass rushers in DeForest Buckner, who's now with the Indianapolis Colts. Nick Bosa's obviously lost for the year, week two with an ACL tear. And Dee Ford has really given them nothing. He played in the season opener and has been on the shelf since with a back injury. We don't know when he's going to come back. Richard Sherman's been out for four games now because of a calf injury. We don't know when he's going to come back. He's getting injections this week to deal with inflammation. So that doesn't sound like it doesn't sound like he's going to be back this week. The 49ers have started five different combinations of cornerbacks in the first five games, and the only cornerback who made the 53-man roster for week one who's healthy right now somehow is Jason Verrett, who has the longest injury history of really anybody on the team. Mm-hmm. So it's just sort of a confluence of factors that are all going against the 49ers right now. And it also speaks to how you know, luck plays a big factor in contending. And last year, the 49ers, they did deal with injuries, but a lot of their injuries they dealt with were not season enders. And this year, the opposite is happening, right? Like Nick Bosa is probably their most important defensive player, and he was lost week two. And so cornerback, obviously a really important position. Richard Sherman not playing, obviously problematic. So, you know, I think injuries explain a lot of it. The most alarming thing to me is the offensive line play. It simply hasn't been very good. The 49ers have allowed five sacks in the last two games. They've turned the ball over six times combined. And I think it has to start there. If you're not going to have all of your skill guys practicing, then the least you could have is your offensive line playing well and cohesive. And they just haven't done that. And Kyle Shanahan said it, of the five sacks the 49ers allowed on Sunday, three of them were complete just protection busts. So something's going on with the communication. I don't really know exactly how to diagnose it because I'm far from an offensive line expert. I do think that not having your starting center, Weston Richburg, who they gave one of the biggest contracts for a center in the league to a couple years ago. He hasn't played this year because he tore his patella tendon in his knee last December. And so you're looking at an offensive line with a backup center, but that still doesn't really explain it because Ben Garland did play with the team through last December in the playoffs and in the Super Bowl. So there shouldn't be these communication mix-ups that have really been hampering the offensive line. So to me, that's the alarming part, but the bright side to all this, I guess, is that we've seen Kyle Shanahan's teams typically play much better in the second half of the season than the first. And given that there are seven seeds now that go into the playoffs this year instead of just six, there's going to be a team that is around 8-8, 9-7. And any team sort of in that range at the end of the year is going to be in the playoff mix because you have that extra seed. So the 49ers would have to go 6-5 the rest of the way to finish 8-8. And I think that's possible. It's probably unlikely given the gauntlet of a schedule they have upcoming. But I think they can get there. I think they, even without Bosa and Ford, I think they can be good enough on offense potentially to make up for some of their shortcomings on defense. I don't know if that'll happen this weekend, but I do think they're going to be a team that's probably in the 6 to 9 win range. And if they're in the you know, the 8 or 9 win range, then they're still going to be in that mix for one of the wild card spots. And I think that's how you have to look at the season now if you're a 49ers fan. Otherwise, you're just hoping that this looks a lot like 2018 in the sense that they get a good draft pick, are able to draft a difference maker, and then if they're healthy in 2021, they can make another run at it.
Chris Biederman, you are more optimistic than I am about the 49ers, and the world has turned upside down. Super 2020, right? That's like pretty amazing right there. But I think you brought up, obviously, two really important points. What Kyle Shanahan said yesterday about the lack of practices between Jimmy Garoppolo and all those skill players. And so I agree with you, the offense should get better as time goes on. But I also agree with you that the most alarming thing is the play of the offensive line. And if that doesn't get figured out, it's not going to matter how many practices all the skill players have together. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out over the next several weeks and what happens with this team. But you also make, of course, another good point with the 7th seed. There is a possibility, a much bigger possibility of them making the playoffs than there would have been under other circumstances. Steph, go ahead, please.
I was just going to just note that I think Kyle Shanahan has this really like dynamic run game. And I think that the game plan kind of went out the window when the Dolphins went up so much. You know, they went, I think it was 14-0. And then they had to come out and pass the ball. And it's just, you know, with the shaky health of Garoppolo and kind of that whole thing, I felt like they weren't even playing that game, their own game anymore. I felt like it was all just like, you know, well, let's just adjust on the fly. And the 49ers are just so regimented and used to doing what they do that it just seemed off, completely off. And something's going to have to change there, like their entire game plan on Kyle's end, or he's going to have to find plays that his players can execute with all the injuries and all the things that are going on.
Yeah, and that's what Shanahan has said a couple times the last few weeks. Mm-hmm. You know, the running game hasn't been particularly good. It was better with Raheem Mostert back, obviously. I think he had some 119 total yards. But the issue with the 49ers offense right now is they have to run the ball to be effective because so much of what they do is built off of the running game, whether it's mm-hmm. play action or, you know, using guys in jet sweep motions that the defense has to react to before the snap and then creating space elsewhere that the 49ers can take advantage of. If they do not run the ball well, they're not constructed to do anything else well, really. Right. So, like, if they can get the running game going, which obviously starts with the offensive line and winning at the line of scrimmage, which they haven't done, then I think they're going to be in a better spot. But the offensive line issues, like, it's a really bad combination to have a gimpy quarterback behind a bad offensive line. And
yeah, terrible combination.
the offensive line hasn't been good against the blitz. And if I were a defensive coordinator playing the 49ers, I would just hammer Jimmy Garoppolo with blitzes
all day.
And then at some point, he's probably going to be off kilter to where he might throw you a pass that you can intercept or two. So I just think, like, you know, right now, the most important thing the 49ers need to do is shore up the offensive line so they can be better in the running game and then set up everything else. So they're not in these, like Steph said, they're not down multiple scores, having to abandon the running game and put the quarterback in a compromising position where the defense can pin its ears back and take advantage of that offensive line struggles in pass protection.
Correct.
I'm not hopeful. I just think that I don't know. I don't. I'm just not hopeful. I think that it's going to be a big problem, and I do feel like they regressed a little bit in every single area. And to your point earlier about luck, you have to be it's hard to go to the Super Bowl, and you have to have a lot of luck, and things have to go your way. and the 49ers, everything that can go wrong has gone wrong. Yes. So I don't know. It just may not be their year.
It's not their year
in a football season.
Yeah, it's 2020. It's not their year. They're not going to the Super Bowl. I think at this point that I am not a negative Nelly, but I think Chris is 100% correct that at this point, I think 49ers fans, the biggest hope is that they can go 6-5 the rest of the season and kind of limp into the playoffs and then hope maybe things are different come January. But I don't know that I would say Super Bowl is on the agenda, but probably because I just said that, they'll go, but they won't. That isn't even like, I don't even think that's in the cards. Yeah. They're in the same division as the Seahawks, who may never lose another game. And I think we have to talk a little bit about Russell Wilson and just the incredible season he's having. And, you know, I think it gets talked about every year, but he is that team and they are never out of it with him. And he truly is, it like kills me to say this, but he's certainly one of the best. He's certainly one of the best quarterbacks in the league right now and potentially could end up being one of the best ever. But those Seahawks are good. They are just, they're good. And
lucky. They're lucky.
They're lucky. But sometimes I think, and Chris, I'd love your feelings on this too. I think sometimes you're lucky when you're really good. You also create your own luck in a lot of ways.
Yeah, I think there's something.
Not injury wise, but you know what I'm saying.
Well, I think there's something to the idea that they've had so many crazy, weird fourth quarters that they're sort of used to it. Mm-hmm. Maybe in ways that other teams aren't necessarily. Like the Seahawks are in their comfort zone when a bunch of crazy stuff's happening in the fourth quarter. And a lot of that is up to Russell Wilson. Like, Russell Wilson's had a really great career to this point. But this year, his completion percentage is the best he's ever had. Yards per game, best he's ever had. He leads the league with 19 touchdown passes in 5 games, which is a lot. He's throwing 11.2% of his touchdown passes. 11.2% of his passes are going for touchdowns. His previous career high was 8.2%.
That's an incredible
DK
stat.
DK Metcalf is a monster, and admittedly, I think I was pretty wrong on him coming out of the draft because I subscribe to the theory that you do need to move laterally at some point to play receiver at a high level in the NFL. But
when you have Russell Wilson,
when you're back, right. I think that makes a big difference.
Drops the ball, it's a perfect fit
for Metcalf. Perfect. So I think the Seahawks did really well with that, but. You know, it's one of those things where coming into the year, you're like, well, no matter how bad the Seahawks roster is, you know they're going to be in it because they still have Pete Carroll and Russell Wilson. And then getting Jamal Adams gives them obviously some semblance of star power in the secondary that's been lacking it since the Legion of Boom disbanded. So
you sound like a band. It's a band disband. The Legion of Boom disbanded.
That's true. A grunge band from Seattle.
They broke up. Uh-huh.
But yeah, I just think it's at some point it felt like Russell Wilson was going to win an MVP. Like he's just had that kind of career. They're like, all right, at some point he's going to have an MVP season. The Seahawks are going to have a year similar to what the 49ers had in 2019, where sort of everything went right for them and they played really well. And so it's not totally surprising for me to see them off to this 5-0 start. But you know, we'll have to see because they do still have some glaring holes on the roster. I'm still not sold on the offensive line. I'm still not sold on their defense. But given the fact that they have 3 under center, that might just be enough in this really weird season.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. Like I'm still kind of mind boggled by their pass rush and that they're able to get so much done, you know, and I think that the Minnesota Vikings kind of put up a really good template on how to beat them. And so, and it was kind of a stupid call that they didn't kick the field goal because Minnesota would have had that game. And you have to win the games you can win. And so I don't fault Seattle for, you know, going all the way, because I think that they did their job and they made that win. And I think that that's what was important at the end of the day. But I do think they're beatable. I don't think they're as fantastic as everybody's making them out to be. But it could be my bias that, you know, I hate Seattle Seahawks.
Well,
I like that you admit your bias.
Look at the rest. if you look at the rest of the NFC, I don't know that there are a whole lot of trustworthy teams right now.
There really aren't.
You know, even the Packers, like the Packers have to be up there with Seattle when you talk about the NFC hierarchy, obviously. And, you know, do we trust the Packers who we don't know if they have enough offensive weapons to beat a good defense yet? You know, I haven't watched a ton of Packers, admittedly, but, you know, last year it seemed like the flukiest 13-3 team that we've had in recent memory. And now Aaron Rodgers is completely at a different level. And so maybe, you know, Rodgers has the same effect as Wilson, to where he can cover up a lot of the mistakes that they have. But there isn't a team like the 49ers last year. You thought, you know, the second highest scoring team in the league, obviously one of the best defenses in the league. There isn't that team in the NFC that has that same level of balance. So I think the playoffs are going to be fascinating, because there doesn't seem to be that one team that really doesn't have any weaknesses. A lot of these teams do have weaknesses, particularly in the NFC. And so it'll make the playoffs really fun and hard to figure out, because like New Orleans isn't the team we thought it would be, right?
No,
they're struggling a lot more than people thought. And a lot of people expected them to be the favorites in the NFC this year. So the beyond Seattle and Green Bay, it seems like the NFC is kind of a jumbled mess. And I think that leaves a vacuum for other teams to make a run at it. Maybe it's the Rams. It's probably not a team out of the NFC East. And I don't know that there's a team, maybe Tampa Bay in the NFC South can grab that vacuum and sort of take advantage and you know, become a top seed. But the NFC is really weird. It's just been a really weird season. And I wish I had more intelligent things to say about it than that. But this COVID season is just very odd.
It's bizarre.
Well, you said it earlier. It's 2020 in a football season.
Right.
And you said it about the 49ers, but I think you could say it generally about the NFL as well. You brought up the NFC East. Obviously, we saw that terrible injury to Dak Prescott on Sunday. That was just heartbreaking. Apparently, he has gone through surgery, and I guess they're saying 4 to 6 months. Hopefully, he can recover from this injury, but that was just a heartbreaking thing to see out of a guy who's not only a great quarterback, but a great person. And so you hate to see that. So
that was prayer. Brutal.
It was brutal. Absolutely brutal. I did not actually watch the injury because it happened during our game. And then I just felt I understood what happened. So I felt I didn't have to watch it. Well, before we move into a little baseball talk, there's one other team that we want to discuss, a team that's had high expectations on it and then has definitely not lived up to them. And now I think they're actually legitimately good, the Cleveland Browns. And they're fun. They're good. They're fun to watch. They're a pretty complete team. I mean, Steph, we've been talking about the Browns in this podcast for years, so I'm going to start. I'm going to let you start here and just talk a little bit about what is going right for this team, other than kind of everything.
Well, I mean, I just think that there's so many good things that the Browns have going on. I mean, I think that they were able to defeat like the Colts, who aren't having a bad season at all, like decidedly. So I think that they just really showed that they can put up, you know, 30 plus points on offense. I mean, any team that's going to do that is going to be good. And then on their defense, which you obviously have Myles Garrett and crew, but like, it's finally all coming together. They have a quarterback, they have a really strong run game, which I love. I think that's one of my favorite things about what the Browns are doing. It's interesting. And when someone has gone down, they're able to just pick up where they left off. So that's kind of, it's just everything's clicking for them. And, you know, I'm happy for the poor Browns fans in Cleveland. I think that they deserve it.
Yeah. The Browns are interesting because, I mean, they do anything except run the ball that's like really impressive right now. They're first in the league in rushing, and they've forced a ton of turnovers. So you do wonder, mm-hmm. are mm-hmm. they, is that sustainable? I think it probably could be, given that you mentioned Myles Garrett. Like, they have a lot of talent along that defensive front. They've invested a lot in the secondary recently, and now they finally solidified that offensive line, which, if you can run the ball in Kevin Stefanski's offense, it's very similar to Kyle Shanahan, sort of the same Gary Kubiak coaching tree. And, you know, to be able to beat the Indianapolis Colts, who I thought was, you know, one of the best teams in the AFC, at least the best roster, and they had gotten off to a good start, to beat them, you know, by 9 points on Sunday is pretty impressive. And I, you know, I'm always a little bit leery because, like, you know, our friend Matt Maiocco, a couple of years ago, I told him going into the season, it actually might have been last year, I was like, you know, the Browns, like, what do you think of the Browns? I think they're really talented. They might be good. And Matt goes, well, they're still the Browns. And I was like, yeah, but that's not like that's not really a thing. Like, this is a good football team independent of all that. And then, you know, it was a Freddie Kitchens year and everything just sort of went downhill. He's like, oh, yeah, that's what Matt was talking about. It's still the Browns. So I do wonder if the Browns are going to be able to sort of overcome that stigma. And I guess it's something they just have to deal with perpetually. But they have a really good formula right now, which is run the ball, win the line of scrimmage with your offensive line, and force turnovers. And if you're doing that, you don't need Baker Mayfield to be a megastar. They have the 29th ranked pass offense in the NFL right now, but they're 9th in touchdown passes. So they're clearly efficient. And like I said, they're able to run the ball. They're averaging 5.5 yards per attempt. And they have a really good group of running backs with the guys they have there. So it seems like it's the Browns' time, but the question becomes then, like, the AFC North is pretty loaded with the exception of the Bengals. You know, are they going to be able to win that division? Probably not. Are they going to be a wild card team? I think so, but it's going to be tough for them because they still have to play the Steelers. They have another game against the Ravens. They have to, you know, they have to play the Raiders. I'm looking at their schedule right now. They do the back to back Giants and Jets late in the season, the playoffs.
Oh God, free games.
So, at MetLife, we don't know if the MetLife turf will completely swallow their whole season. Like what happened to the 49ers early in the year. But you have to be excited if you're a Browns fan, I think. I think it's good for them.
And I think a little Browns a turning point on the idea of they're still the Browns, which I think is a fair comment, was that game against the Cowboys where they went up by so much and the Cowboys mounted a comeback, but the Browns still won. And my feeling was the Browns of last year and the year before would have definitely lost that game. It wouldn't have even been a question. And to me, that may have been a little bit of a turning point for them that they're the Browns, but they're not the Browns anymore, if that made sense.
Yeah. And I think that they made some really good personnel moves too. I mean, Kevin Stefanski, I think is how you say it, but he is really aggressive. And that to me made the difference in this game and some of the other games that I've seen. And it's been fun to watch because I don't think that anything, like you said earlier, is that anything's really spectacular. But when they need to make plays, they do. And then he's willing to take those aggressive. It's like it kind of looks lucky, but I think they're good at it. So I think that's kind of what it just kind of shows a little bit of his aptitude. And I think that those were the personal, you know, changes that they needed to kind of put everything together.
They have a big game this week against the Steelers on the road, which will be interesting. So I think if they're able to beat the Steelers to improve to 5-1, then you really have to take them seriously. If they don't, you know, if they lose to the Steelers, then you can say, all right, well, the Browns beat the Bengals, Washington, Dallas. They scored 49 points on Dallas's terrible defense. Was the Colts win really indicative of who they are, or did they play above? Did they punch above their weight a little bit? So I think it's going to be really important for them to play well against the Steelers. Otherwise, it'll be fair to ask the question, did they just take advantage of an easy schedule that they've had early on?
And the Steelers run really well, and I think the Browns don't defend the run very well. So it's going to be a good matchup for sure. So, we'll see. I guess.
It feels like it's going to be a good matchup, but time will tell. But I think it'll be a good matchup, but we'll see. We definitely will see. That could be one of the fun signature games this weekend. And I thought last weekend's game against the Colts was one of the fun signature games. So look at the Browns competing in signature games. So I guess there's something to be said for that. All right, we're going to talk a little bit of baseball before we get to Friday Night Lights. We have the NLCS and the ALCS. In the ALCS, the Rays are up 2-0 on the Astros. You notice I just called them the Astros because now my focus just needs to be on the Dodgers winning, and I can't take any of my negative energy and put it on the Astros for now. Then we have in the NLCS, the Dodgers playing the Braves, which is something Steph and I talked a lot about
going into the season.
It actually happened, and so we could talk about that for a bit. So the Dodgers playing the Braves lost last night, so the Braves are up 1-0. These playoffs, they're going 7 straight games. No days off because everybody is in a bubble. There is no travel. But we'll see. The Rays obviously look really good. And a 2-0 lead is nothing to scoff at. The reason Steph and I have talked about the Dodgers and Braves NLCS so much, for those of you, if you're just tuning in today because you were just excited Chris Biederman was on, that is because I'm excited Chris Biederman
was on. Maybe my dad.
So I want your mom and dad to understand that I have been a Dodgers fan my entire life. But I also, for several years in there, was a Braves fan. Is a really big
which
fan.
Which I have
of,
a problem with.
Yes, which Steph has a problem with. It just never really mattered up until yesterday. I was a really big fan of Tom Glavine, a really big fan of Chipper Jones, really liked John Smoltz, and so also became a Braves fan. But like I said, for the majority of time, it didn't really matter. The closest it ever came to mattering was in a division series. But quick background again, for those of you, Chris's mom and dad, I grew up on the Dodgers. My grandparents bought season tickets in 1962, which are still our family seats. And so I've been sitting those my whole life. My brother is the president of the board of the Dodgers Foundation. So there's a lot of connection to the Dodgers. Also, for anyone who's missed it, big Cody Bellinger fan over here, big Mookie Betts fan. So but this Cody thing has been going on for a while. So I chose the Dodgers. And Steph told me at the beginning of the season, if the Dodgers and Braves played each other in the NLCS, I wasn't allowed to root for both. I had to pick a side. So I picked a side. I picked the Dodgers. And I have to say, as I was watching the game last night,
I was proud of you. I was proud of you for picking a side and you stuck with it. I was proud.
And it's funny because as watching the game, although it was a little weird in the beginning to root against the Braves, I think institutionally I'm a Braves fan, but I'm really a Dodgers fan. Like it wasn't even once the game was going.
So your heart.
My heart is really came through. My heart is really with the Dodgers. And of course they broke it in game one. And I was like, of course I picked the Dodgers and they lose tonight. Which by the way, if I'd picked the Braves, they would have lost last night. There's no doubt in my mind that that's true. So that is where we are. That's the background for those of you that are just tuning in. But I think it's going to be a really good series. I mean, the Rays and Astros, I do think the Rays are pretty much the far superior team. Maybe not far superior, but are the superior team on that one. So I don't know how long that series is going to go. I think the Astros will win at least a game. But I think this Braves-Dodgers series is going to be a really good series. You have two really good pitching staffs, though. Clayton Kershaw was scratched tonight because he has back spasms. So it'll be Tony Gosselin who will be starting in game two. But you have two really high-powered offenses. You have two good pitching staffs. If Dave Roberts can just learn to manage a bullpen sometime between the time of recording and the time the game starts, that would be amazing.
Every pitcher available.
Every pitcher available. And he just – and still, it's really unbelievable. By the time this airs, we'll be about 2 hours into game two of the NLCS. So we'll see. But that is kind of what I got. And so – I've talked a lot. I'm going to let you two speak now.
I don't have a whole lot of baseball analysis in me because I'm still hurt by the Athletics of Oakland. Perpetually.
I'm sorry.
But I am looking at payrolls right now. And because I remember seeing this mention that the Rays have a $28 million payroll.
Yeah.
Their entire team costs 28 cost $28 million, which is about as much as most NFL quarterbacks make. The Dodgers have $108 million payroll. The Astros have an $83 million payroll. It's wild to me. I mean, I appreciate the capitalistic nature of baseball. It's just crazy that these teams, like you talk about the Rays being favorites over the Astros, despite the Astros being, what, three or four times more expensive. Mm-hmm. It's crazy that's going on. But yeah, I was just curious, not to shift the conversation too much. Have you guys ever mentioned the Oakland Athletics on this podcast?
Yes, we sure have.
Yes, we have.
Okay.
Because they were my AL team. I had adopted them as my AL team, and so they were brought up. Sure have.
Yeah, it's been tough being an A's fan. That's really all I got on the baseball front, though.
It's actually funny when you bring up the payroll. Last night, I had to listen to the game on the radio for a little bit while I was walking the dogs, and the announcer said that Will Smith, who's the pitcher for the Braves, which, fun fact, the Braves have a Will Smith and the Dodgers have a Will Smith, which I think is really amazing. But Will Smith, the pitcher for the Braves, you guys, like anybody who knows me knows that kind of thing just blows my mind and makes me happy. I believe Will Smith of the Braves signed a 3-year, $40 million contract, and baseball salaries being what they are, I was like, oh gosh, is he good? because Mookie Betts signed a 12-year, like half a billion-dollar contract. So it's just kind of funny that baseball salaries being what they are, like 3 years, $40 million, I'd sign that contract right now without even looking at it. And it's just kind of funny. Baseball salaries are such that I was like, oh, that doesn't seem like that big a contract.
Yeah. My other baseball take is that the Astros can kick rocks and jump in a lake and all of those other niceties.
You can come back anytime, Chris Peterman.
We love that. The cheaters.
You're just buttering us up over here. You can come back anytime you want.
This is not an Astros podcast.
Steph, I would like your thoughts on the – yeah, it's definitely – we should change the name of this to the not Astros podcast, except we'd have to put a certain word in front of their name that I won't say until the series are over, because I don't want to put negativity out in the universe. I'm in superstitious phase. Actually, let me ask both of your opinions on something super important. I have this Lucky Mookie Betts shirt that I wore all through the division series, but then I wore it yesterday and they lost. So now do I start over with a new shirt?
I'm just a little stitious. Like, I'm not superstitious.
I'm like superstitious in all capitals.
But like, I mean, I think I would change the shirt.
I think I have to.
I think that's the only remedy here. And you just have to try the new shirt.
I think so.
The new shirt. Like, it's really only a lucky shirt if they win a World Series while you're wearing it, right?
That's true. So here's another question. Do I put on a different Mookie Betts shirt, or do I have to abandon all Mookie shirts for a little bit?
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't think you can go wrong. I'm sure you'd be fine with a Cody Bellinger shirt.
Music to my ears. Okay, great. Right. Thank you. Again, you can come back anytime. Thank you, guys.
Maybe
I
not
really
a Kenley Jansen shirt.
Yeah, I'm not putting one of those on, and I love him. I do, but yeah, we're not gonna wear that. Maybe my nice swing bit shirt. I don't know. We'll see. We'll see.
I think Joe Kelly fan. Any athlete who can rock glasses and be kind of a badass about it is a winner in my book.
I do love Joe Kelly. All right, so I have options, but that original Mookie shirt is going to have to be retired for a little bit. So thank you, guys. I really appreciate that. Was very important to me. Steph, quick thoughts on how that series is going to go, and then we're moving into Friday Night Lights.
I mean, the Dodgers are a powerhouse. Like, you know, he said that, I mean, they have everybody. They pay everybody. They go and grab every great pitcher. So I'm kind of on the side of, you know, I'm just used to the low budget underwhelming teams that, you know, in San Francisco. So I know that San Francisco has changed its like MO, but you know, I grew up on like the Bay Area not doing very well. So I think I just kind of have an affinity for the underdog. So I am definitely a Tampa Bay Rays fan in 2020. You know, it's baseball, and I think everything's been a little bit bizarre. I hope the Dodgers get beat. That's kind of like, you know, in my DNA.
Rude.
So I have to root. I have to root against you. And if they do win, I'm happy for you.
But what does your baseball knowledge say? Take your heart out of it.
Well, I think the Dodgers are powerhouse. I think that they're
great. That's what I was looking for.
I feel like they should win. They should be in the playoffs every year. They should win every year. They should be, you know, in the LCS every year because of their payroll. That's what I think.
And they should win this series against the Braves. But I think this has the potential to be a true 7-game series. They may go 7 on this one. We'll see.
I think Dodgers and A's fans have something in common in that obviously very different teams in terms of payroll and all that, but similar in that they're a lot of the time really good in the regular season and then flame out in mm-hmm. heartbreaking fashion in the playoffs. So I know what that feels like, Tracy. I know what you're going through or what you have gone through.
When the Dodgers lost in the NLDS last year, then my two best things were from you and from our friend Matt Maiocco. Matt Maiocco, I tweeted, I know a lot of you, because I cover the 49ers, so I said, I know a lot of you hate the Dodgers, but I think a lot of you like me and your fangirl is really sad right now. And Maiocco tweeted back at me and said, I hate the Dodgers, but I think the world of you, Tracy, and I don't want you to be sad, which was so sweet. And Chris, you texted me and said, baseball pain is the worst. I'm sorry. And it is. Baseball pain is the worst.
You have to go through so many games and so long of a season, normally.
Normally. Yeah. But even, and I also think because it can all change so fast.
Yeah.
Like it's like one pitch and everything is different. But it is.
What do you think about all this long ball, though? I mean, everybody's hitting home runs like crazy. Like, I'm like, it's like 21 to 23. You know,
I love home runs. I love home runs. You remember there was a commercial a long time ago with Mark McGwire, Tom Glavine, and Greg Maddux. This is in the heart of me, like, really being a huge, huge, huge Braves fan. As, by the way, as I say all this, I'm staring at my signed Smoltz and Chipper Jones jerseys that are hanging in my office right now. And there was that commercial, Chicks Dig the Long Ball. Well, that commercial spoke to me. I love home runs. I love them. Absolutely love them. I love them if the Dodgers are hitting them. I don't love them when the team the Dodgers are playing hits them against them, however. But that's just the fan in me. That's the fangirl in me.
It's crazy that there's so many of them. I was like, wow, everybody's hitting home runs.
I'm into it. I'm super into it. I mean, when Kiki Hernandez is hitting a home run, but when Kiki Hernandez hits your only run of the game, you don't deserve to win it. But tonight will be it'll be different. I know it. So we'll hope for the best on that. All right, guys, we are moving into Friday Night Lights time. We have made it to, actually, I can't believe, Steph, that because we've been talking about this for a while, we have made it to the season one finale. As I think I've mentioned before on this podcast, season one was the only true full 22 episode season of this show. So we'll get through all the other seasons a little bit faster, but we've made it to the finale. Our beloved Dillon Panthers are going to state. Coach Taylor has taken the job at TMU. Tammy Taylor is saying, Julie and I ain't going, but we're staying together anyway. And that's where we are. Do you guys like that little synopsis I just gave you leading into the episode? Thank you. Thank you very much.
I love the enthusiasm, too. It's always like, you've got us all like watching Friday Night Lights.
So. You know how much I love the show. I love it so much. And then I also have to throw in here that, and I think I've mentioned this before, my ringtone on my phone is the Friday Night Lights theme. And so my phone rings, Cappy starts barking because she thinks there's someone at the gate because that's the same thing. And so when we watched the show and last night we rewatched the finale, when the theme comes on, she sits up and looks around and starts barking because she thinks someone's here, and it's really funny. So there we are. I'll give a little synopsis of what happens and then we can dissect it. So we are going to state, it's kind of a lot of interesting things happen. Some relationships get mended, some not so much. Chris, do you want to do the synopsis or you want me to do it? You are a guest, so I want to give you the option.
No, I don't want to have that responsibility. That's okay. A lot. I've never gone on a podcast to talk about a TV show.
Well, this is
all the time.
Yeah, we do it all the time. We're very excited.
Homework. I watched the last two episodes the other night, and I brushed up on what happened in season two early on, so I do have a little bit of context going into it. It was a pandemic show for me. Like early on in the pandemic, I watched. I watched Friday Night Lights.
Who told you to watch Friday Night Lights?
Who told you to do a podcast about it?
That would be you. So everybody wins in this scenario. Everybody wins. So, okay. So this, it opens with the rally at, before the team is leaving for states, we've got a Panthers rally and Coach Taylor is looking for Tammy Taylor because she is not there. He calls her and she is on her way somewhere. We don't know where yet. Who he does find are Matt and Julie making out. And Julie has told Matt that her dad has taken the job at TMU, although Coach Taylor very specifically did say to her, you cannot tell this to Matt Saracen, but really, in all reality, there was no chance that was ever going to happen. So he finds them. He calls Tammy. She says that she's so sorry. Her computer broke, et cetera, et cetera. She ends up at Planned Parenthood. Tammy Taylor is pregnant. Just to add a little bit of a wrinkle into the entire thing, she is pregnant. So that is something that she has somewhat mixed emotions about because apparently it was something they had tried for several times and did not work. So she's excited. It's just the timing seemed off, but hey, what are you going to do? And of course it's Smash's mom who works at Planned Parenthood who does the test for Tammy, which took me back to the episode early in the season when Smash's mom says to Tyra, I work at Planned Parenthood. You won't be seeing the last of me. You guys remember that line? Because she said that to her.
She's one of my favorite characters.
She is awesome. Smash's mom is amazing. So they end up leaving for state. Tammy doesn't tell Eric yet, but he does know. Steph, do you like? I always switch, by the way, Chris, from Coach Taylor to Eric, depending on what we're talking about that he's doing. Okay. And there's like no kind of rhyme or reason to it, except that I guess when we're talking football, it's Coach Taylor. And when he's at home, he's Eric. Eric is upset that Julie has told Matt. Julie says it's not her problem. Tammy tells Eric she has something to tell him, but she can tell him later. So they leave for state. Before all this, Tyra invites Landry to drive with her to state because Tim Riggins is supposed to give her two seats on the 50-yard line. Chris has very specific thoughts about Tim Riggins, which we will get to in just a little bit. But she has supposed to have two 50-yard line seats to state and ask Landry to drive with her, for which Landry is so excited. And as he tells Matt, I'm going to play some romantic Crucifictorious songs, which is funny in itself because anyone who remembers Crucifictorious, their songs are not exactly romantic or good for that matter. And he's very excited about the entire plan. Unbeknownst to Tyra, Tim takes the two tickets he promised her and gives them to the neighbor so her little boy can go. And her little boy's name is totally escaping me at the moment. Bo, thank you very much. So Bo can go to the game. And then before they leave, Tyra says, where are my tickets? And he's like, oh, I gave them away because you don't like football, which just wasn't cool. And I'm sure doesn't surprise Chris at all, except that it was nice that he wanted to do it for Bo. So he gives her four other not-so-good seats. And that also means that Landry's romantic getaway with Tyra is ruined as they're driving with Mindy and Tyra's mom to state. More comes of that, but I'm going to back up a minute. Lila in the show brings her car back to her father because she doesn't want the car or anything to do with him at all after his affair with Tyra's mom and what she's found out that he's been doing to her mother for years. And so she's done, and she went and bought a used car from somewhere else. So on the way to state, her car breaks down. As luck would have it, Landry and the Colette girls are driving by. Oh, and Matt's grandmother.
And grandma.
Yep, and grandma, because they passed by the bus station, and Matt's grandmother was sitting there waiting for the bus to go to state, which was like the most heartbreaking thing ever. So they pick up Matt's grandma. So now they're also – Lila's car breaks down. As luck would have it, they all come driving by, convince Lila to go with them, even though she and Tyra get into a little bit of a spat, if you will, before then. And somehow Tyra feels better because Jason Street made out with another girl. Mm-hmm. And so she feels better somehow that Lila knows what that feels like. And then all seems to be right in their world – or not right, but better. So they head to state. In the middle of this, we have the team arriving at the stadium, which is where the Cowboys play. And this scene, of course, this will shock no one, who's on the podcast with me or listening makes me cry when they go into the locker room. I mean, thinking about it, I might cry. They go in the locker room and they see their names and they see Riggins 33 and Saracen 7 and Williams. And it's like, it's really cool and special for these kids. And this is a team that really wasn't supposed to go to state. And after the Jason Street injury, it should have been over, and it was not. So that's exciting. They walk out on the field, and then in a dramatic turn, Voodoo Tatum's Mustangs walk out on the field as well, because they will be playing Voodoo in the state championship. So there's that. And then they have a media session, and this is where things start to kind of take a turn. So they have a media session, and you have Matt Saracen, of course, saying it doesn't matter who we play. You know, I wish nothing but the best for Voodoo, and Smash basically being like, I hate Voodoo. I don't wish anything good for Voodoo. And it would be great to meet him, to beat him. And then a reporter says to Coach Taylor, those evil reporters, Chris, the evil press says to Coach Taylor, basically, how does it feel to be leaving? And that's how everybody finds out about the job at TMU. And it's definitely hard on the team. And they're not happy about it. And they think he's kind of a traitor, even though I do think that's unfair. But they're young kids. And then Jason Street says to everybody, like, listen, if you guys could have gotten a job at TMU, you'd go too. Like, that's his dream. And he has a right to his dream. Voodoo comes to visit Smash and basically tells him he wants him to come to his high school because they would be a powerhouse. And Smash says, I'm a Panther. And Voodoo doesn't really subscribe to that theory. But basically the big thing here is that, can the team rally behind Coach Taylor? Can Coach Taylor rally the team with them knowing he's leaving, and them feeling somewhat abandoned by their coach? And I think something that's worth bringing up that we've talked about before is, like, for a lot of these kids, like Coach Taylor, he's very much a father figure for them. And he is one of the few people in their lives that they can truly count on. And I think that's very true of Matt. I think it's very true of Tim. He saved Smash in a lot of ways. I mean, Smash, it could have been all over, and Coach Taylor chose to handle the whole thing with the steroids in a way that, you know, was a huge deal for Smash and made it so that he could continue playing football and potentially go to college and beyond. So it's a really big loss for them, not just as a coach, but as a person. And that shows in the first half of the game when they go down by a lot. And it looks like all is lost. And he comes in and gives them a really good halftime speech. And then this is going to make me cry too. They come back out and they just play so well, and then they win, and it's so exciting. And I cried, and I'm crying now because this show makes me cry all the time. But they really play so well. And kind of what you were saying earlier about Derek Carr saying to John Gruden, do you trust me at the end of the game? I thought about it when you said it, and I was like, I'm going to save it for now. Matt Saracen, it comes from the end of the game, and they need like a trick dramatic play. And Matt Saracen says, like, I can do it, coach. And he does. And it's amazing. Yeah. And they win.
I love how every single, like, every game comes down to that final play. And so, of course, State was going to do it, you know.
And, like, very unlikely. And every time I watch this finale, I forget that they go down by so much in the first half. And I'm like, how did they end up winning this game? And then I get reminded. I just want you guys to know that there are actually tears have come out of my eyes right now. I'm wiping my eyes. But it's so awesome and so special. And it goes back to something that I've been wanting to say for weeks, but didn't want to ruin the finale for people. But on this show, good things happen on the field because so many bad things happen off the field. And where they get a Hollywood ending is on the field. And we see that in this season one finale, and it's so exciting. Oh, and before the game, I totally forgot that before the game, Tammy tells Eric that she is in fact pregnant, and he's very excited about it. So at the very end, Eric's driving to the Panthers field house and listening to the radio where everyone is praising him for winning state and for what he did, and then bashing him for leaving. And he walks in and here's Jason giving them a speech. Jason is now, of course, the coach of the team and saying to them, enjoy it because tomorrow it changes and everything changes and there'll be targets on your back. And he walks into the field house and everyone's super quiet and then they all clap for him and it's so sweet. Chris, aren't you glad that you put this podcast?
What a synopsis.
Yeah, I couldn't believe they won state. I mean, who could see that coming?
Well,
a big network TV show that they're not even certain that they're going to have a season two. Just completely shocking development that they would come back and win that game. Really surprising.
But did you cry when they all stood up and clapped for him, Chris?
I didn't cry. It was a good moment, though.
Are you crying now?
No. I'm leaving the tears. I'm leaving the tears for you.
I think I'm on my own island here. All right. There's your synopsis. Now we can discuss.
That's good.
Thank you.
My favorite line of the episode was Saracen's grandma when she got in the car and saw Tyra and then asked her where the booze is.
Yeah.
that was my favorite line from the episode because Tyra built up a reputation.
Yeah, but even grandma knows.
I really enjoyed the back and forth between Tyra and Lila when they saw Lila on the side of the road on the way. And then, of course, there was the whole those two have a very complicated relationship for a few different reasons. Mm-hmm. But the whole conversation that they had, like, hey, cheerleader bitch, you want to ride? Like, that's kind of a funny line. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, just the back and forth that they had and the way they were able to reconcile. Because, like, they had a whole bunch of stuff happen to them that was sort of outside of their control. But they had plenty of reason to dislike each other. But then they realized, like, these are just circumstances that neither of us really had a whole lot to do with, mm-hmm. maybe with the exception of the Lila and Tim Riggins thing. But, you know, it was interesting way to sort of tie their relationship together at the end after everything they went through. And Lila asking Tyra to ride home with her at the end after they won state, after Lila threw away her cheerleading uniform.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was. I thought that was a good way to tie things up with them as the season ended, and it's a life lesson, Tracy. Like you can mend relationships, even if bad things happen, and even if you think those bad things are insurmountable.
It is a good life lesson, Chris. Thank you. I appreciate it. It is a very good life lesson, and there are so many life lessons on the show. Chris, were you not surprised that Tim Riggins promised Tyra the tickets and then gave them to someone else?
No, not totally surprised. as you know, Tracy, I'm not the biggest Tim Riggins fan, and I think a lot of people like Tim Riggins. I did some research and read around on the internet, and there were a couple different sites that said Tim Riggins is known for being a loyal friend and having a good heart.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I just couldn't disagree with it more. Because like if I were to have a loyal friend, or if I were to consider a friend loyal, that friend probably wouldn't sleep with my girlfriend as soon as I became paralyzed. You know, somebody who I called my best friend, like that's just not something I would do. So it's, I just think Tim Riggins is a very interesting commentary sort of on, the good looking dude who gets away with whatever he wants. Because he's a star football player and whatever. And I understand he has issues. He didn't really have parents. He was more or less raised by his brother who has his own issues. And Tim, but Tim gets away. Like my thing with Tim too, is he gets away with cutting class and being drunk all the time. And he still gets to play football. Like when I was in high school, people who did that were not allowed to play sports. Like you couldn't even practice on a day you missed class. Which was just weird. But anyway, so maybe it's a jealousy thing because I was certainly not Tim Riggins in high school. I was far more like Landry. So maybe that's why when Landry talks about Tim Riggins being the tragic, good looking dude or whatever that everybody likes, like I sort of relate to that because I was very much more like Landry than Tim in high school. But yeah, I don't understand how everybody can look past Tim Riggins' misdeeds and everything that he does and be like, wow, he's such an awesome dude, because all the evidence is there that all this guy does is make bad decisions, does not have his friends back when he probably should, And yeah, like don't sleep with your best friend's girlfriend. Just don't do that. Is that fair?
And the argument, that's fair. But the argument I always give to Mr. Biederman here is that they are so young and they went through a tremendous trauma and it was a terrible mistake on both of their parts. But I forgive the fact that they are so young and I don't think any of us want to be judged long term on decisions maybe we made at 16 and 17. And I think what's sad about Tim is he does want to do good and he never really knows how. But when push comes to shove, he is a good person. And that is my feeling on Tim. And we'll see that more as the season goes on. I don't want to ruin it for those who have not continued on. But I just, that is always my argument in favor of Tim Riggins. Steph, yeah,
I mean, at first I wasn't a big fan. I mean, obviously. And then, but he grew on me and I just, everything he does, you can see like he has a good heart. Like even, I mean, he shouldn't have cleaned the neighbor's gutters, but he at least like takes care of that little boy. And I just think that that's sweet. And that shows a lot that he's not like deep down, you know, he may have made bad decisions. And I think everybody makes bad decisions. But I also think that deep down, he's just a good dude. And in like you said, we see more of it. So maybe I'm a little bit like, but I just think that I don't know. I liked everything that, and I feel like he's never going to like bullshit you either. Like he's going to tell you and he's going to own up to what he does. And I think that's a big thing because everybody makes mistakes, but at least he says sorry, you know, and he really means it. Otherwise, he won't say it. So I just like that you know where you stand with Tim. He's just one character that I really enjoyed.
See, Chris? See?
he can be like he's an integral part of the show, and he's a good character because of all the complexities that he has. I just don't. I'm just not a fan of Tim Riggins the person, and I know what he's dealing with and how he tries to help people, but he also has a lot of opportunities throughout the show, and maybe that's just part of his arc, right? Is that he's supposed to learn from all these mistakes that he makes, and then he rectifies it at the end, which is sort of I don't want to spoil exactly how it happens, but like it is part of his arc, right? That mm-hmm. he's just this dude who makes a lot of shitty decisions and hurts a lot of people around him, but he does come back from it in I guess what some people would argue is an endearing way. I personally disagree with that idea and I don't want to spoil exactly what happens to him, but I think you could thread that needle without doing what he did, later in the season and, or later
we'll
in the show.
We'll have you back.
Yeah. We'll have all the time.
Yeah. So I just think, you know, Tim Riggins is fine. I think my point on Tim Riggins is if he looked like if he wasn't a football star, he wouldn't get away with all of the stuff that he gets away with.
But I think that's what makes it, I mean, that's probably true. And it's probably true of a lot of jocks, but I think that's like the only normalcy he has in his life is the football. And so yes, I think everything else is like, that's like the one thing he has. And I kind of relate to that, like with sports and kids come from really troubled, deeply. I mean, some of the stuff I was like, whoa, you know, like I couldn't even imagine, but not having parents and he's like 16 years old. And I just, you know, it's just, that's fascinating to me. And I think that the high school part of it and it is that's the one constant he has. And so, and that's the one thing he treats seriously. Everything else, nope. But that gives him something back. And I think that's why he is so loyal to the football program.
I think that's true. I think that's true. That's true. I like it. I like it. You know, I like everything you're saying. Okay. I like everything you're saying. I would like your thoughts. I think Coach Taylor is well within his rights to take the job at TMU. And I know he wasn't the head coach of the Panthers for long, but this opportunity came up and it was a big opportunity. And he makes a very good point to Buddy When he thinks Buddy's going to jump down his throat, and really Buddy is all Buddy says to him is, "I'm really going to miss you." But he said, "I was here with a 5-year plan, but I never heard that from you or the boosters. In fact, all I heard after game 2 when we lost was I was really close to being fired." But I do think he was in his rights to take that position. I can understand why they feel like they're being abandoned, but it's a huge opportunity for him. And those opportunities don't come every day.
Buddy Garrity is an all-time character.
He's so good. I love the way how excited he is when they win state is so amazing. His whole life is falling apart, but the Panthers have won state and he couldn't be happier.
It solves everything.
Everything.
Yeah, Buddy, it's a very, they did a good job of portraying the classic, like, over-invested booster guy who does everything because his happiness resides solely in high school football. And they do a good job in portraying how problematic that is, but also how, like, I mean, the fact is, like, Buddy Garrity is a really important guy to that football program because of all the money he helps raise. And everything like that. So it's he's a great character, and I think they did a good job of, like I mentioned with Lila and Tyra, intertwining him in with their storylines and their arcs, as well as like tying obviously his responsibilities with the football program. But Buddy's always like, he's one of my favorite characters because he's just like that guy, like that football obsessed guy who puts everything in ahead of football. And like, even in some cases, his family, which is obviously really problematic, but yeah, I think Buddy Garrity is a really crucial and maybe underrated character in the show.
I would agree with that. I would definitely agree with that. And then our good buddy, Matt Saracen, who leads them to victory in the end, who is also a great character. And it's so funny because you look back at Varsity Blues, which is, you know, which was like the CW version of the Friday Night Lights movie. And then the Friday Night Lights TV show kind of is a combination of both, sort of. And so Saracen is like Johnny Moxon, but they're so different. But the idea
that
you haven't seen Varsity Blues?
No.
Oh my God, Stephanie McCarroll, when we are done with this podcast, I know what you're doing the rest of the day. But Saracen is, you know, the guy who came in and had never really even thrown a pass, and now he leads them to state. And it just goes again, and everything that's going on in his life off the field, other than Julie, of course, is he's got a really difficult situation. But on the field, Hollywood ending. That's kind of the Friday Night Lights formula. We'll see it, not to give anything away, but like we will see it throughout the seasons, that off the field is rough and on the field is they get their Hollywood ending. So there's my thoughts on that.
I like how Saracen turns into sort of like I know this is beyond season one, but he goes from like what he is as a football player to very much not the stereotypical jock when he goes to college and leaves.
Yes.
I think that's an interesting arc, and how impacted he is by Julie in that transformation that he makes, because he sort of turns into because Julie's kind of anti-football, he turns into that sort of anti-football guy post high school. And I think a lot of that is because he wants to be what Julie wants. And so I think that's an interesting arc for Saracen.
I think that's true. And next week we'll be talking season 2, episode 1. And you all will see how everything changes. And season 2 is it's an interesting season in a lot of ways. And it got a lot of flack because season 1 was so critically acclaimed, but it never did well in the ratings. And in season 2, they did a few things to really try to boost ratings that went against why it was critically acclaimed. But it is funny, as I rewatch it, I actually don't have as much problem with it as I did in the beginning. I still always loved the show, but really? Things changed. Yeah. I know. I don't want to shock you guys, but I've like always loved the show. things definitely changed dramatically, but it'll be exciting. So next week we'll have season 2, episode 1. The World Series game 1 will be next Tuesday, which is just crazy. It's just all going so fast. We'll see if the 49ers do, in fact, get it together. Can the Browns beat the Steelers? Those questions and more on the next episode of Fangirl Playbook. Do you guys like that dramatic ending?
Loved it.
So, Chris, thank you so much for coming on today. This was so fun.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It was good. Yes. I'm not Tuesday is a good day for me because I'm not really doing a whole lot.
So what you're saying is you want to come back.
Yeah.
So you're great. We will have you back. Don't you worry about that. Steph, I will of course talk to you next week.
I want to say one last thing about Tim Riggins, if it's okay.
You can say, of course it's okay. Absolutely.
My favorite thing and made me crack up in the whole show, and I don't know if it's just my quirky weirdness about books and like how much I read, but I loved when Tim Riggins explained the Scarlet Letter.
Yes.
That was my favorite. I cracked up, and I'd be at work, and I would just be like cracking up over that. So I just want to say that. He's just hilarious.
What did he say? There's a girl named Scarlet?
Well, obviously, it's about a girl. Whose name is Scarlet. I just thought that was hilarious.
God bless Tim Riggins. He's the best.
Tim kiss and tell Riggins to open season 2.
Kim. Oh, yeah. Chris. Well, we'll talk about next week. Chris does not like something he says to Lila in the first episode of season 2.
Okay. Okay.
Though it is followed by a compliment, but.
He's hurting. Like, he's hurting. He has so much, you know, angst in there. That's why he does.
Yeah, his first interaction in season 2 is funny.
I gotta watch it.
And to me speaks to Tim Riggins' character.
I think he's great. I don't like that Tim Riggins slander here.
Chris and I have had so many conversations about Tim Riggins, and it's actually kind of hilarious. But we have had like so many conversations, and I kind of think we should agree to disagree, but then I kind of want to keep talking about it and try to convince him otherwise. So we'll see if over time we can do it. Maybe when we have him back on the show. With that, you guys, don't forget to subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. Don't forget to follow us on Instagram at Fangirl Sports Network. And we will talk to you guys next week. Bye.
All right. Bye.